15 into hour two, and a fun, rollicking conversation. I don't know if rollicking is the right word, actually. Maybe this might be rollicking. Lee Einsiedler on his way back downstate from Saratoga after I called it an emotional week and weekend. Congratulations.
Thanks, Steve. I'm here on the side of the road next to a cornfield in the car with Jeffrey.
I love it. And, you know, I tried to frame the victory in the special by with High Oak. And, you know, in addition to to you having an interest in Gormley as a racehorse, even the origins of Gormley is a story in itself, and the ties between John Sheriff's and his childhood on Long Island, and why the horse was even named Gormley.
You know, I hadn't even known that for a while, and then when I had spoke to John Sheriff's, I grew up in Great Neck, and he grew up in the town next to me, Port Washington. He's about 10 years older than me, and he worked at a place you know, Lakeville Stables. And back when I was in high school, I had a horse at Lakeville Stables, and we used to ride him there at Lakeville Stables, and John Sheriff was working there. And then life brought John Sheriff to California, and lo and behold, they named Gormley after the gentleman who ran Lakeville Stables. The guy's name was Gormley. So I have a connection with John Sheriffs and Gormley going back 50 years. I mean, how do you make that up? It's 6:30 in the morning and John Sheriffs calls me. He said, Lee, you made our day. We all have interest in Gormley. Boy, what you guys accomplished for us yesterday, man, amazing. I said, well, good thing Gormley won 5 years ago at Del Mar. I went to board a Gormley last year.
that's true.
Right? We're really cool. Really cool.
You know, you bring up a strong point when you talk about what, you know, physically what he looks like, and that, you know, by pedigree, Gormley out of an elusive quality mare, and physically looking at him, you know, that really 5.5 and 6.5 are not distances you'd expect him to, you know, to win like this. I mean, he won this, it should be noted, he won this by 4+ lengths and was just running away from them at the end. And, you know, the prospects for stretching out in the Champagne to a mile and beyond, that's what he's meant for.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you buy a 2-year-old colt, you envision, you hope, you dream about having a horse like this. And normally it doesn't happen. I mean, you know the chances of it happening. And as you and I were talking in the box before the race, just the way we thought it was going to turn out, it turned out. I mean, how often does that happen in racing? And the way he's been training up here all spring and all summer, it might have been a surprise to those who let him go off at about 10-1 on Saturday, but Jeffrey and I are talking about it here on the ride home. It was no surprise to us. None at all. None at all.
And, well, you know, and let's...
You know...
Let's talk about this for a second, because there's the matter of the internet chatter. People were looking at Will Pays, and first they saw the Will Pays that were seemingly pretty short from Speaker's Corner to High Oak. So people noticed that, and then when it came time for the grade one for the 4-star Dave, here was a $91 pick three to Casa Creed, who was the third choice. And so people were like, oh my God, what kind of bets? So explain to everybody how you guys approached the double to the special and the pick three to Casa.
Yeah, well, early in the morning, Jeffrey and I put in our pick sixes and pick fives, because we just didn't want to have to do it at the track, you know? So we did that early in the morning, and we loaded up on the pick five. And then coming into the eighth, I don't mind sharing this with you in the audience. I bought a $1,000 pick three, the eighth, ninth, and tenth. Mott, Mott, Mott. Unbeknownst to me, Jeffrey did the same. So that's why the mutual payoffs were what they were. Casa Creed run, unbelievable. We're so proud of him. He's such a cool horse. Third in the four-star Dave. If he would have run the thing, we would have went to the windows and took out $635,000. So we're thrilled he ran third in the four-star Dave. We're ecstatic what happened in the Saratoga specials. But, you know, when it comes to the windows, I'm not bashful, and we loaded up, and we certainly crushed the double in the eighth and ninth, and we had a big bet in the eighth. Speaker's Corner is a really special horse. I mean, yeah. he's really good, and obviously we bet our horse in the ninth, and we walked out of there with a bag full of cash. It was almost ridiculous, but it turned out to be great at the window, and more important, it turned out to be great on the track, and such a gratifying win. And we were listening to your show earlier, and just put a smile on our face. Last year was the anniversary of Aaron leaving us way too soon, and that was on our mind all week. And there we went into the winner's circle, looking at the sky and crying, and just one of those amazing, amazing days.
And I'm glad you're listening, and I imagine, Lee, you don't donate and give to causes, and I don't know if you saw on Twitter, Brad Weisbord told a very funny story about you sending a truckload of Jaeger paraphernalia to him in college, was hysterical.
Yeah.
That was hysterical, and he explained. He said, "You're a giver, and you know you've explained in years past, your background growing up in Flushing, and you know your eagerness and willingness to enhance people's lives, and so you know the way everybody reacted to this and to any success you have is such a to me the kind of the boomerang coming back around. People are so happy to see you do well."
Well, I know that we have great support. We have so many friends at the races. When Ohio crossed the finish line, you were with us, and Rob Masiello coming over, hugging and kissing us, and Louis Lanagero grabbed me so hard, I think he cracked two of my ribs. it was amazing, and I know we've developed tremendous support in the community. People are thankful for the generosity that we've been able to share with the Backstretch employees and Anna House and Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, and then the outpouring of support over our family situation has been overwhelming. Charlotte and Ginny, they planted a plaque across the street over at the Racing Hall of Fame. In Aaron's memory with his name on it, and they sent me that certificate a couple of weeks ago. I was overwhelmed, and, you know, people just so supportive, and I guess, you know, when our horses run, I always tell everybody all the time, all my horses are going to win because we're so enthusiastic about the game. But when it came to High Oak, and Steve, I'm a big believer in the program Thorough Manager. When I went to the thorough manager and looked at the race for maybe about a half an hour, for many reasons too technical to get into on the show today, I was more convinced than ever that we had a huge chance on Saturday, and it just played out, man. It just played out.
You have the opportunity, seeming scenario between the two of them. Obviously, Casa, you were always pointing, no matter what was going to happen with the Troy or the four-star Dave, you were heading to Kentucky Downs, and now the Champagne for High Oak. And Lee, the prospect of showing up at Del Mar with two starters in the Breeders' Cup, that has to have a special feel to it.
You know, we're so looking forward to it. As you know, in this game, you can't get too far ahead of yourself. So our focus right now will be getting Casa Greed down at Kentucky Downs and run 6 furlongs for $1 million on the 11th. And we'll point High Oak to the Champagne. And as long as everybody's fresh and happy and doing well, it'll be certainly an honor and a privilege to put them both on the plane, go out to Del Mar, and that would just be amazing. So that's still a few months down the road. Right now we'll focus on Kentucky Downs and Belmont. It's always fun to think about the possibilities. If we could show up at the Breeders' Cup with both of them, that would really be a dream come true.
Well, that's what it's all about. That's the motivation. Having dreams to bring to the game and bring to the sales, bring to the breeding shed with mares, and getting these kinds of opportunities. And so many of them end, in a disappointment, and people have to be prepared for that. Then to have the successes it makes the effort, the expense, the emotion, it makes it worth it. That's the payoff.
It sure is. I mean, and in this game, there are a lot of highs, there are lows. But for us, Steve, somebody said to me the other day before the High Oak race, I think it was Rob Masiello, who's just a fabulous guy. I love him to death. He said to me, "You're really nervous." I said, nervous is, 30 years ago when I had two kids and a mortgage and no job and my severance check was about to run out. That's nervous. I don't get nervous about the races. It's all about having a good time and enjoying it. And I never let the lows bother me. And the highs are unbelievable. Saturday night, we went to Danny's. There were 7 of us. Jeffrey's with me. Amy's with me. Jeffrey's friends were there. My good buddy Bud Klein on Premium Tap came up from Florida for the race, and we celebrated till the wee hours, and then we went back to 21 Madison to the house and smoked cigars and drank 2 bottles of tequila. So I never let the lows bother me, and I can tell you I take the highs excessively and really enjoy them. Saturday night was glorious. It was just one of those out-of-body experiences, and when you're there and when you're doing it, it's like you just got to enjoy the moment. It was really, really special.
Well, happy, obviously, to have been able to share it and to celebrate it this way and on TV yesterday, and more to come, obviously, and we should fold in the two parties that we haven't included. My fault for framing it, but Bill Mott and Junior Alvarado obviously deserve, and Bill's whole staff a tremendous amount of the credit here.
I also want to tell you that to do this with my friend Mike Francesa is unbelievable. He's been involved in the game for a long time. He's a student of the game. He understands the game inside and out. He understands breeding. He understands racing. He understands every aspect of the game. And to do it with him, and he's got an amazing family, and they're such great people, 3 great kids, and we were talking about the race, the High Oak race, and before the race, he said, as long as he's running at the end and finishing, that would be great. And I said, no, he's going to win today. He said, let him just run a good race. And, man, he was on cloud 9 in the winner's circle. He's so thrilled. He calling me all day yesterday, biggest win of his life. And then, you know, Bill Mott is beyond special. When High Oak worked a few weeks ago with Casa Creed early in the morning, and I said, geez, you're working him with Casa Creed. He said, you know, Casa Creed, Steve, as you know, is a very good workhorse. He runs on the grass, but he works very fast on the dirt. He said, yep, time to tighten the screws and get serious. We got to win a couple races next week. And when you have that, when you have that Bill Mott comfort factor in your corner, and he tells you that way, and he talks to you like that, time to tighten the screws and get ready to win a couple big races, you just feel like when you go over there, you just feel like you have a great chance. And as we talked about, you know, anything could happen. A jock can lose their iron out of the gate and things happen, or a horse runs off. But generally speaking, man, when Phil Mott puts his game face on, you got to pay attention.
Lee, I appreciate the opportunity to let everybody, you know, share in the pleasure involved in this. And another grade one placement for Casa, and the grade two Saratoga special for High Oak, and a lot of exciting things ahead. Well,
no question. No question. No question. We appreciate the opportunity to share our story, and we're really excited about what's going to happen here the next month, a month and a half. And by the way, Steve, I was thrilled that you sat with us and we watched those races together on Saturday. It was great having you.
I love it. It's, you know, being able to you know, feel that you know, it's a vicarious thrill, you know, you when you see it unfold, and the funny, you know, with the funniest part,
he was putting all of his weight into it. So it was fun to watch that, and so thrilled for Lee. That's the real deal. That Colt High Oak, he's special. You know, the fact that he won first time out, going, you know, 5.5, and Bill Mott, not a guy who cranks him up to win first time. You knew that there was a lot more there, and you could just see how much more professional he was. Like, the first time he kind of felt like he was running with the emergency brake on and stops and starts. Well, he was all horse under Junior Alvarado on Saturday, and nobody more deserving than Lee. One of the most quietly generous, giving people that you'll ever meet in your life, and what he does for so many different charities and for people just in general. Just a wonderful guy, and very happy for his success as well.
Let's talk about some of the results and some of the specifics. Actually, we'll start with God Stormy, and Rich. It is kind of funny, and it occurred to me, you know, as I was laying out at the beginning of the show some of the weekend highlights. You know, here's a race named for a horse that would come up to Saratoga, and no matter what kind of form he was in before he came back to Saratoga, he would lift his head being here. And it does seem that that Got Stormy's got that same kind of story going. I mean, that she perks up when she gets up here.
Well, that, and talking with Mark before the race, he was saying how much she loves the inner turf, that, like, she's so handy and she's so good on her left lead that she creates a really good trip for herself. And you go back and watch the race, she created, I mean, Tyler gave her a terrific ride. I'm not belittling the ride, but, you know, when you've got a horse that can put you and be shifty, put you in those spots, you know, so that made a lot of sense, Mark talking about that. And just how good she was doing, you know, just that, like you said, they get up here, a little cooler evenings, something to do with the water, the atmosphere. We've seen it over the years, horses that just really, really enjoy the atmosphere of Saratoga. Whatever it may be, I think there's an intangible there, too. But he really loved her. And frankly, too, listen, trainers listen to, like, everything people say about their horses. And he's like, everybody's written her off. He goes, she's going to run giant today. And sure enough, she did.
The the angle of you know, the configuration and you know, horse, Rich, that you can speak to this, you know, you're more qualified to speak to this probably than anybody, and the difference between wide sweeping turns and the tighter configuration of an inner anything, depending on, you know, on the racetrack. Horses that run the turn well, and you know, that element. Explain the nuance of this, and how readily, from a handicapping standpoint, you can identify this, or is it strictly something that you have to see unfold and get a certain number of starts to, you know, have a feel for how much of it is the physical properties of a horse in terms of being small and nimble, perhaps, or, you know, long-bodied and loping? Explain some of those intricacies.
Well, it does have a lot to do with the horse's physicality. And just think about, you know, different cars you drive, right? You have a sports car that's a little lower to the ground, hugs the ground more, is shifty. You can change, you know, lanes and maneuver and accelerate and, you know, and you get, you know, a pickup truck, let's say, and, it, you know, you've kind of got to build into a speed. You're not going to go from 0 to 60 very quickly. Same thing with horses. You get a horse that's, you know, from a physical perspective, not as big, a little bit lighter on their feet, having the ability to be shifty, change gears, if you will. You know, that's one part of it. And not to say that you don't have big horses that have that ability. That's usually your best horses that actually have size but have that maneuverability of a smaller horse. They would be the absolute luxury vehicle. I remember when Four Star Dave won the Hall. I mean, I'm really going crazy here. Artie Schiller won the Hall of Fame in Saratoga. They had moved it because of rain overnight from the outer to the inner course, and I had like post 7 or 8, and I was really worried. I didn't think he could lose, but then all I could think about was, is he going to handle these turns okay, and am I going to be able to find my way to the inside by the first turn? And we were on the rail by the first turn in behind horses, and he handled it great, but I actually did have some anxiety over it when they changed the course because I knew that he would handle the main course fine. And as it turns out, he handled the inner fine, too, and we were able to work out the trip. But it's definitely a factor. So from a physical perspective, if you don't have proven form to go on, look at horses. You know, that's one of the things that Maggie points out so well, Maggie Wolfendale, and she's been on a roll with it, you know, pointing out horses' physical strengths and weaknesses. And, you know, when I watch horses in warm-ups, I try to clue people into that stuff, too. And, you know, there's definitely something to it. You can't discount it. That's why some horses run better around one turn than two turns. They're just not as handy at getting position going into and switching leads as well coming out of turns. So they can linger on one lead for, let's say, that long run down the backstretch at Belmont, where if they go a mile and an eighth at Belmont, they're effective. They go a mile and an eighth at Aqueduct, they're not as effective because they've got to jump off, grab their position, and then moderate, and then be able to build back up into that momentum. So there's a lot to it. It's a lot more than just what, you know, you see on paper handicapping. In a perfect world, if you could incorporate that part of it, the physical aspect of it, into your handicapping, then you're going to get a clearer or a bigger picture, if you will.
No, thank you. And it's, you know, part of that. You know, it's part of that process when, you know, when we go from Aqueduct to Belmont to Saratoga and back. And, you know, there, I haven't heard, you know, it's funny, I haven't heard, just saying that, I have not heard this year the analogy that you hear something, I've got to think about what the tie is between the Aqueduct. Which course at there? We used to make the analogy of success at Aqueduct. With which course? Which were the courses, Rich? That we used to think that if a horse ran well
Well, honestly, I always felt like horses that could handle the turf course at Aqueduct, you know, because it was a 7/8 course before they pulled up, right? If a horse could handle that 7/8 course, they were going to run well on the inner turf course at Saratoga.
Yes. Yeah, because I remember, and I haven't heard that analogy made this summer at all. It used to come out every year for a long time, and I'd forgotten about that until we just started this discussion.
Well, you know, I think in New York we get a little bit spoiled. You know, we have the ability to run that one turn mile at Aqueduct. You have the ability to run a one turn mile and an eighth at Belmont. You know, years ago it was a mile and a quarter. They'd break from the middle of the training track, the extended chute, which I thought was brilliant. I've often wondered why we couldn't run a mile and a quarter from the mile and an eighth pole at Belmont to an eighth past the wire. You still are on straightaway, and, you know, it would be very similar to the way Churchill Downs is configured going into that turn where the wire is, and then there's the turn. But you would finish it. We break, as opposed to breaking, you know, on the turn, and post position becomes a factor, which it really shouldn't go in a mile and a quarter. With the enormity of Belmont, you could get a little creative and just say, okay, for the mile and a quarter races, we're going to the second wire. And if jockeys can't figure that out or remember it, then shame on them. Then they shouldn't even be riding.
Rich, shift gears. You heaped some praise on High Oak, and you know this was an interesting group. And the Saratoga Special and the Adirondack are kind of unusual in that you know the 6.5 configuration distance is. It's not really neither fish nor fowl, you know. It's right. It's parv, as we say in the kosher community. It's not milkadick. It's not fleishadick. You look at those horses. I mean, there's going to be some in that group that are going to now confine themselves to sprinting, and others are going to keep stretching out. Certainly, Gunite ran a nice race. High Oak essentially left everybody kind of gasping. What else did we see in this race that we can latch on to going forward toward, you know, I don't know if anybody's running in the hopeful out of this group, but you know, we're certainly going to see, you know, these are horses that have got one or two starts under their belt, and you know, they'll keep trying if that group of, you see the sets of connections involved here. And this, you know, this was a high level group.
No, I think it was a very high level group. And I think it underscores how much, horses change, you know, particularly with a race under their belt. And honestly, though, I understand what you're saying about the 6.5 kind of being a no man's land, right? But it really is when you're going from 5 or 5.5 to 6.5. It's a quantum leap for babies. You know, me and Alan Jerkins used to talk about this all the time, how, you know, years ago they would start the baby races, they had the ones at Hialeah going 3 furlongs, but in New York, 4.5. And then they, you know, would have an A other than going 5/8, and they would build up to the point where they could run in the Champaign, which was a mile back then. And that was pretty much it. That was going to top it out. You had the Remsen for the much later developing 2-year-olds going a mile and an eighth, and that was always a barometer of obviously who had stamina. But I think what you could take away from this is just you look at High Oak's first race, which to me was very, very good on a number of levels, but did not get a fast figure. So again, we talk about incorporating, you know, speed figures and what you see on paper, and remembering that they're flesh and blood and they're going to change, and they're young horses, and you know, how much they develop in a very short period of time. And I talk about it a lot. Horses that you can equate to high school athletes, graduating to college athletes, and then obviously going on to be, you know, professional athletes. And not that they're not professional athletes to begin with, just to try to equate it to, you know, the human sequence, if you will. And, you know, how many times the kid that starts high school as the most mature, the kid that's already shaving in ninth grade and is the best athlete. Coming out of high school, not necessarily the best athlete anymore because the group caught up or even surpassed at some stage. And then let's fold into this, Steve, and me and my son Joseph have talked about this ad infinitum, about a lot of horses have ability. They have the physical prowess. But the intangible is the desire and then the mental capacity to put up with the rigors of training, the excitement of race day, the afternoon atmosphere. You know, I've seen a lot of good horses, you know, as far as ability goes, not reproduce that in the afternoons because they just don't have the mental capacity to handle it, process everything, and stay cool, stay calm. Years ago, John Kimmel had a two-year-old. Unfortunately, he wound up having a heart attack, but his name was Bellagio. I had never sat on a two-year-old like this in my life. Before that or since then, he was so smart. We were at Fair Hill. We were walking out. It was like a mile walk to the track from John's barn there. And I'm on this big Son of St. Bellagio, and we're like a group of 10 or 12 two-year-olds walking out, and a bunch of deer come crashing out of the woods. And every single two-year-old spooked who wheeled and dropped the rider, who ran off. Bellagio, my horse, just stood there. Ears up, watched about 10 deer run by through the field, and then dropped his head and kept walking to the track like nothing fazed him, nothing bothered him. And then he could freaking run. He had the smoothest stride of anything I ever sat on in my life. He was so good. John had a horse named Wouldn't We All that had won the toboggan, ran 7/8 and 20 and change. I rode him for his dad, Caesar. That was his workmate. He was a five-year-old because none of the two-year-olds, he would get nothing out of work. He'd go so... I ran once, and they said he had a heart attack in the race, and a few days later, he had another heart attack and passed. But he was the package. He was the mind, the body, the talent, and the desire. He wanted to dominate horses. And I remember going home after working him down at Fair Hill and telling Carmella, I know what it's like to, like, what it must have been like for Turcotte to sit on Secretariat before he ran, or Kruge sitting on Seattle Superfriend. This is the kind of horse this is. He was like a whole different dimension. You know, so, unfortunately, we never got to see, you know, him fulfill his promise. But, it's that thing. When you're looking at horses, you know, Steve, you watch horses in a field. Who's the dominant horse? It's the horse that other horses move around. When a horse moves their feet around another horse or because of another horse or gets out of their way, that's the herd leader, the one they're moving around. And that's the idea like behind natural horsemanship. You make a horse move his feet around you. You don't move your feet around him because then he owns you. He dominates you. It's the same thing with their psychology. Their outlook is that if I'm walking to the feed trough and horses are getting out of my way, I'm the boss. And it's the same thing, your interaction with horses as a human being, that, hey, if I can be stationary and this horse has to move around me, then he understands that I'm dominant, that I'm the one who's leading.
We touched on some of this a little bit earlier this morning with Hugh Robertson, actually, and similar kind of... kind of conversation. That's interesting that you went, they include that in discussion. And I want to slip this in because I just heard from Alex Barkoff in New Orleans, Rich, and he's got a couple of thoughts. He said he really enjoyed the four-star Dave tribute, and you can visit that in a second. And also, he misses you on Twitter.
Well, thank you. I was talking with someone... Actually, Ron Marquette made a lot of sense to me. He said, you're a good voice for the industry, and people look forward to your insights, and we need people like you to communicate on platforms like Twitter and maybe help educate people and understand the game more and not to let a few negative, people stop me from, basically... my responsibility giving back to the game in that way. And he kind of touched on it, made a lot of sense. And I will come back at one point. I just got worn out with the negativity. And when it went after my daughter, I was like, come on. Any way I respond now, I'll look like a jerk. And as a parent, you want to protect your children. So that was why I kind of knee-jerk reaction said, I don't need to share so much of myself. But I will be back at some stage. And as far as the Four Star Dave tribute, all the people that work behind the scenes on Saratoga Live and America's Day at the Races made that piece as good as it was. Ernie Munich with his editing and everybody involved. I don't want to start naming names and leave somebody out. All I did was talk about some of my memories of the horse, and then they make it all look good with the clips of races and stuff. I will tell you, though, that DQ, and everybody could see it now for themselves, one of the worst disqualifications. We brushed a horse that finished fifth, and it was one stride and pulled off him, and you took him down for that. And I'll be honest with you, what was a little bit more on that, and me and Dennis Carr are fine now, but Dennis Carr was on the horse that finished fifth and claimed foul. And I really lost my temper at him and had to be held away from him by several people. He had bothered me in a race about a week earlier, and I actually protected him in the stewards' room, and they left him up. And then, like less than a week later, he finished fifth and claimed foul, and I was apoplectic. No good deed goes unpunished. And he and I have long since talked about it and gotten past it. But at that time, Carmella had a tack trunk made with, the MIG on it, very fancy. And I was so frustrated I couldn't get to him in the room that day that I wound up putting a chair through my own tack trunk. How did that make any sense? You're dumb. Just dumb.
there should be maybe out on your farm, you could have kind of a memorial park to all the inanimate objects, the payphone, the tack box.
Hey, you know what I do have hanging in my barn? You know the board that they would run up the changes in the infield, the old
yes.
change board?
I've got a picture of it I'm using.
Yeah, I got that in my hanging in my barn. I was out there doing a feature on the Travers, and it was just laying there in the weeds. As well, this is coming home with me. They don't think enough of it to pick it up out of the weeds. I'm bringing it home, so I got it.
Well, and it's funny. I took that picture that I've been using some days on the website with my write up, and somebody commented and said, "I only took that picture 3 or 4 summers ago. I was out on the infield side, and I walked up the track to take a picture of the start, and it was being used at that point. And somebody wrote the other day when I put the picture up, Rich, they said it's a shame that they don't do it, and I didn't realize that it's not being used anymore.
Yeah, I think it just over the last couple of years they stopped doing that. I know there were a few times. The guy that would have to change it, Lightning, we'd get one of those freak storms. Lightning would, come through there, and he'd be running for cover. But I want that job with all the lightning. But, I have it hanging in my barn above my tack room door. I enjoy looking at it. I get a kick out of it that, it's there. And actually, Robbie Davis, there were two of them, I guess they had, and he's got one. He keeps on telling me I got to swing by his barn and get it because he took the other one with my name on it.
Oh, that's funny. I'm gonna put the picture up as I talk with Mig. There we go. I'm gonna put it up for everybody. And Rich, what we should do because I didn't get a chance. It was with everything going on at Arlington and. It really did not get a chance to talk Four-Star Dave, and I don't know if you and I have talked about him in the past, but it came up just earlier with Hugh Robertson. He brought up his horse, the Illinois-bred Polar Expedition, and He was a horse that won stakes six different years, from two all the way up to seven or eight. And, you know, the four-star Dave record, and I saw him, I don't know how many times, particularly at Saratoga, but also downstate. And you latched on with him fairly late, right?
Well, I rode him kind of maybe his 4 or 5 year old year. I won on him, the West Point. And then I got hurt, and Mike Smith picked him up. And then I got him back later, and I rode him his last 25 starts. But I had him at one point earlier. Randy Romero actually won. Back then, the Empire was for two-year-olds, six furlongs, and he rode him in the Empire in the slop, and he won on the dirt. Daryl Montoya won, like, the Canterbury Derby on him or something, or the Minnesota Derby, something at Canterbury. Angel Cordero won on him as at the one time it was the DeWitt Clinton, and then it became the Albany. So he did win on dirt, too, and then Mike Smith, myself, I mean, he had a lot of different riders, but I got him steady again the last two or three seasons, and I rode him probably the last 20 or 25 times. I forget exactly what the number was, but, you know, he was very good. I mean, even the day that he finished third to Paradise Creek and Lore, you know, he got injured that day. Like, he wasn't going to beat them, but he was going to be closer, and he kind of bobbled coming to the eighth pole, and you could even see it in the feature the other day. I kind of was wrapping up on him because he didn't feel hurt, but something wasn't quite right, and I kind of eased him back, and he, you know, preserved third, but, you know, he would have got beat 3.5 lengths instead of seven, let's say. But and then that was when he was injured. And I remember then Mr. Bomsey, okay, we tried to bring him back. He just wasn't going to train on, and he had had enough. And they decided to retire him. So I went to gallop him in the retirement ceremony, and he got very, very rank with me because I went up to the quarter pole, turned around, and started galloping him, and the crowd started cheering. And he heard the cheers, and I thought he was ripping my arms out of the sockets. I thought he was going to run away with me. And all I could think of, if he runs away with me, Mr. Bomsey is going to say, no, we got to try him again. Look what he did, you know. So I'm trying to talk him out of it, going, listen, Dave, man, you don't want to run again. You better quit pulling on me. And thankfully, I was able to hold him.
Well, and I just memory. Pulled it up. I just pulled it up. For those that didn't see the feature or see any of the written tributes, as it were, to four-star Dave, 99 career starts, 21 wins, 18 seconds, 16 thirds for $1.6 million between June of 87 and August of 95. And Mig won... His last four wins came with Rich, and here's who else won with him. Jean Cruguet won with him. Robbie Davis, Mike Smith. Smith won, looks like, seven times on him. Then you earlier in 89. Jose Santos with a pair of wins in 89 as well. Angel won with him in 88. Nicky Santa Gaga, as Tony Black would say. Nick won a little stake at Finger Lakes with him. Randy Romero, as you mentioned, and which Estrada is this that broke the maiden?
That was J.C. Estrada was riding in New York back then.
Wow.
Was he an apprentice then, or was he a journeyman?
No, he was. No, he had full weight. He won under 118.
Was my memory correct? Did Daryl Montoya ride him at Canterbury, or I had that wrong?
Let me see. Let's see. You want to talk about... Yes, Daryl Montoya. Look at you at 22-1.
Yeah.
Wow.
Daryl Montoya was a good rider. He was under contract to Mr. Conway. He was a good rider too. You know, he didn't ride a lot outside that stable, some, but you know, there's a guy that was completely underestimated. I think, you know, underrated, I should say. Very good rider.
He won that over Hedevar, the gold.
Wow.
this is really an amazing record, and Leo sent him all over the place too, right? It's not, especially back at that point, Canterbury and Philadelphia, Laurel, Hollywood. he globetrotted him for a while before, you know, settling into the Aqueduct Belmont Saratoga routine.
Well, and you know, it was too. I mean, I know he had the reputation for Saratoga, and rightfully so, but he just really liked summertime. He actually enjoyed the warm weather. Some horses don't. And he liked hard turf courses. The firmer the turf, the better for him. I think I won, I don't know, maybe it was a mile stake in the spring on him at Belmont, but the course was very hard. And he liked to hear his feet rattle. You know, not that he couldn't handle less than firm ground, but he really enjoyed hard ground.
And I'm also going to give everybody one more piece of this with him, because now I just noticed a couple of things with that comment. Belmont, Saratoga, Aqueduct, obviously, Finger Lakes, Canterbury, Hollywood, Laurel, Philadelphia, Meadowlands, Rockingham, Calder, Monmouth, all the different racetracks. Wow. It looks like he was in the sweepstakes. That's got to be the I see grade three, NH. That's the New Hampshire sweepstakes.
Rockingham, yeah.
Diane Nelson. He was fourth, though.
Wow. I went up to Rockingham. I think it was, I won at Suffolk, right? But I think it was Rockingham. I wrote a nice filly for Christoph Clement, Cox Orange, a Darley filly. And it was like the Spicy Living or something. I forget the names of races. But anyway, she was 2-5. And I wanted to make a shuttle, like I was like, I can make the 6 o'clock shuttle or something back to New York. That's when Delta had the shuttle back and forth.
Sure.
So I told the valet, I gave him a check. Like, so the way it works is in stake races, the valet gets 5%. But if you're shipping, you split it between your home valet who packed your tax and the visiting, you know, the valet that takes care of you at the visiting track. For taking care of you there and putting, so they split the commission 5% down the middle. So the race was $150,000, and I wrote out the check for, you know, 5% of $9,000, which was my cut before the race, and gave it to him. I gave him 2.5%, and of course, then I'd give my valet 2.5% back in New York. And the guy was like, it became a legendary thing. He was like, "How confident is this guy? He gave me the check before the race." The only way she could lose is if I fell off, and she won, and I made the 6 o'clock shuttle.
I love it. I used to I guess I'm so old that I remember at LaGuardia that shuttle before it became the Delta shuttle. The Pan Am was running a.
Yeah, it was that little back.
Off to the left, like the off to the left, and I think People Express used that at one point too. But it was for a while. It would be great because it was away from the mess, the perpetual mess at LaGuardia, and you could go to D.C. or you could go to Boston, and yep. You know, it was like taking a bus at that point. But it was Pan Am I remember, you know, when I was first starting to work, when I way back.
There's been so many changes. You know, one thing, though, I haven't been on a plane since before the pandemic. I've driven every place, and I got to be honest, I don't miss dealing with the airports and lines. I'd rather just jump in the car. I've driven to Florida, Kentucky, South Carolina. I just, you know what, I put my stuff in the car and go.
Well, we're leaving for, you know, for Del Mar on Wednesday, actually, and it's our first flight since February of last year. Yeah, year and a half.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know there's times I'm going to have to fly again, but I don't miss it. I was telling somebody the other day, I had never flown on a plane in my life until I became a jockey, and then, I remember flying to Chicago for a steak, and that was the only commercial flight I'd been on. And then there were a couple of, I would go on Friday and Saturday nights to Atlantic City to ride, a couple times Charlestown from Saratoga, and the second commercial flight I ever took in my life was to go ride the Japan Cup, to ride the very one in the very wow. first Japan Cup. I was 16, and I remember we had to land in Alaska because they had to refuel. And I was with Cassius Mewson with his mom, Marilyn. I was by myself. And we had to get out and wait in the airport in Alaska for like an hour, 45 minutes, something. And being 16 years old, all I could think about is, how can I say I've been in the state of Alaska? Like, check it off for another state you made it to in our country. And so even though I never left the airport, I say I've been to Alaska.
Absolutely, you've been to Alaska. Rich, I don't want to wrap up. We're going to talk to Leray Visaggi from Rockridge next. But speaking of the sale, we alluded to it with you, I think, in last couple of weeks. But, the Migliori name, like a rash on that buying bench, all the buyer listing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool this morning when I woke up. I went online and saw the top buyer was Joseph Migliori, agent. I saw how hard he's worked here the last few weeks. I mean, the kid has really put the effort in, and that's something that I know my children probably get sick of hearing from me. But the only thing you really can't control in your life is your work ethic, and if you put the work in, the success will follow. And he's been working his tail off, and I'm very proud of the effort he's made. And came away with five last night. Got action again today. New York. This is kind of like his market. He's a New York guy. The New York breeding program's incredible, and he's got people interested in that. And even before the sales, going up and down the Hudson Valley, and going to different farms, looking at young horses before they even get to the point where they're prepping for the sale and getting an idea of what's what, the lay of the land. So he, for him to have that good a night, I was very, very happy, proud of him. Hopefully he comes away with a few more. He's got some great clients, people that are supporting him and have a lot of confidence in him. And, a lot of horses that he's been involved in and the selection process have been very successful this year. They've been doing very well. And of course, for me, the highlight was him winning a race at Belmont as an owner. As a jockey, you're on one side of the page of the program. The owner's on the other side. And what does every parent want? Better for their children. And much better to be an owner than a jockey. You don't get beat up as much. You get a bigger percentage of the purse. And you don't have to starve.
Well, I'm just looking. You mentioned five, and took home Aleem's Map Philly. Didn't without the client listed $260,000. An Army Mule. Army Mule had a fabulous night for Hill and Dale. $200,000. Then there was a Leaban. The Army Mule was a colt. The yep. Leaban. $130,000 for Matt Cotter, that Meg Levy offered, Leaban Colt out of Dixie Gem, and $95,000, a hard spun filly, for Flying P.
Yeah, Jay Provenzano, they had tried to buy a few horses at the OBS sale earlier this year and just, didn't get it done, but I'm really happy that he got one for Jay. And, I think he picked out some outstanding individuals. I know he did his due diligence, the work, and, it came away with, I believe, a very promising group of youngsters. So it's going to be really fun to, keep track of this and watch. And, we have a game plan for the fall, he and I. And, one of the reasons I was home. I was doing a lot of work at the farm with different things, but we're going to pick up a couple of weanlings this fall in the October sale up here, with the idea of prepping them at my place and trying to pinhook them
nice.
Back here next summer as yearlings. So we, you know, he's kind of given me a little bit of the shove to get back into the, you know, what I really like, and that's hands-on with the horses. And Carmella's, I'm a better horse person than I am. So, you know, I think between her and her feed program, and you know, we have the indoor arena doing the groundwork with them. I'm really excited about it. It'll keep me busy during the winter.
Nice. That's a great idea. How many could you handle?
I could probably handle four, I think, comfortably, you know, working with them every day. But, if you know, we'll definitely get two, and if we wind up with more than that, you know, that'll just be a bonus. But we're really looking to do two, and then I can just, you know, again, focus a lot of time. Because, you know, particularly when the shows stop, you know, for me, like probably the end of November, December and January are very quiet for me. I mean, I do a lot of hiking and stuff, but you know, I like having things to do. I need projects. I have a lot of energy, and just getting back hands on with the horses. Like, we've got a horse now there from John Kimmel at the house, that, you know, his forever home. He's with us, and just working with him a little bit, because he's a little bit, I'll just say, cranky, to be nice, when he got there, and just, you know, doing some groundwork with him again, making him move his feet and understanding there's, you know, it can't run over me. And he's been very good now. He really came around. We turned them out overnight this time of year and then bring them in during the day. So when I went out and got him this morning, I didn't even have, like, I just put a regular lead up on him and he followed me in with his, you know, head dropped right behind me. I didn't have to put a shank on him or anything. So, you know, you like that. I like that. I get a lot of satisfaction out of seeing the progress, you know.
Absolutely. Well, Rich, I will see you over there. Second session starts actually in less than an hour. So we'll see you on the sales grounds, and we're going to talk to Leray Visagi from Rock Ridge about the sale next. So I appreciate
great.
This.
Great. Yeah, I'm actually, Steve, I'm going over first. I'm the keynote speaker at the Gaming Commission luncheon.
Oh, nice.
I'm heading back over. So I'm heading
very
over
nice.
Now.
Yeah, very good. So the Gaming Conference, which is at the 1863, and there's a, you know, even on dark days, of course, the sale is one thing, but the conference today and tomorrow, we'll broadcast from the track tomorrow, and we'll hear from Matt Hegarty and from Eric Hamelbeck as well, and maybe more, depending on who else is kicking around. So, Rich Migliori, everybody, with a variety of racing and sale and more topic. I appreciate
Steve,
it. Thanks,
day.
Rich. You too. There we go. There's Mig. We're going to talk to Leray, and I'm looking forward to it. And I haven't seen, you know, yesterday, as I mentioned, we ended up, as you know, my father, you know, 92, God bless him, and wanted to go see him. And I'm glad we did, because we're leaving for a few weeks, and just needed to go check in. We saw him obviously for his big, you know, we had the big birthday Father's Day thing, but saw a window yesterday to zip down. And while we wait for Leray, actually, I can mention we got a carryover for Wednesday, a couple of racing notes, and that sequence yesterday that produced the carryover was kind of interesting, because the horse of Steve Asmussen's, that from E5, Gimmick, that got away at 12-1. I guess I understand it, and I didn't use Gimmick in my, you know, in my play, but that is a half to following C. It's not as if there was some pedigree there, and so somehow you know, off of the disappointment of the race at Churchill in June, Gimmick gets off at that price. And so I'm sure some people did use. You then had Write This Down, who was very predictable, and Mira Mission, who, like an idiot, I left Mira Mission. I thought that seventh race was so much fun and that there were so many prices to use, and I'd like that Siguloso, I thought was the right price horse, and thought we were going to get one at a huge number. But no, and so I leave the favorite off. I don't mind doing that now and then if it happens. But then customer experience, that was a nice price. 8-1, 9-1 on customer experience, paid $19.40. So that knocked some more people off, she was my value horse in the mix. And Star Divine, too, in the stake, in the Galway, for George Abreu, who is sending him out live. And Larry Goichman, this is not a homebred of Goichman's, but Larry Goichman's having a terrific, terrific year. Star Divine and the $17 there, and Mirabel May was no surprise in the nightcap. But it was a tough enough sequence that nobody could put six on one ticket. So we've got a very healthy, 183,000 for Wednesday, and it's a good sequence. Wednesday as well, not the first running, because they've been running the race itself forever. The former New York Turf Riders Cup handicap, now the Jonathan Shepherd, and the second grade one for the jumpers. And we're going to jump back to the sale right now, because Leray Visagi from Rockridge Stud is with us. Leray, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Excellent, and certainly a very good first night for the New York Breds, and I think we're looking forward toward some of these new Rockridge sires. The next couple of years will start sending out yearlings.
Absolutely. It was a great night last night, but it's always a good night, but carried over good from the select sale, which is not the same, but at least we were expecting to have a solid for the New York Red Tails, so we're happy with where the sales are going, and we should definitely see what tonight will bring. I think there will be one of our horses in there tonight, a frank conversation. So, it's exciting. You know, that's why we're in the game. It keeps our blood pumping.
You mentioned, and we'll talk about quickly this hip 595. I'm glad you referenced, because I was going to bring this colt up and out of that's a very nice mare. She was a stake mare, that them their eyes.
Right, that pedigree is very nice. You know, bred by Majestic Views, good clients of ours, and you know, you can only hope for the best to come out of this. But this mare is definitely on her own. She can stand alone. It's definitely a pedigree that's worth looking at.
Leray, it happens that frank conversation, a horse that came to New York and has a, you know, kind of an each way resume himself, for turf or for dirt, and it will be, you know, it'll be interesting to see. I think he's going to get runners. This is one of those horses that, you know, has kind of a middle distance feel to him, and you know, he won the Twilight Derby and placed in grade ones as well, going longer and shorter. So I'm anxious to see Frank Conversation. You alluded to something as we started about, you know, the New York Breds not necessarily being the same as the open sale. However, you look at the top sellers, and Uncle Mo, Into Mischief, Liam's Map, City of Light, Army Mule. It talk about getting people to appreciate the stallions that stand in New York and the benefits of training your eye on those horses.
You know, the stallions in New York has got a very unique opportunity, because it's New York is the best program in the country, hands down. And the incentive program, what the New York Breds offer to those people that breed in New York, and let's say resident sires by resident mares, I mean, that they offer a phenomenal upside for any breeder or anybody that wants to race the offspring from New York sired New York Breds. I mean, I think in the years to come, you're going to see that will probably be a standout. We're on the board trying to always think of new things to entice the New York program. I think Kentucky will always be the center of our universe, but New York is going to be very close. I wouldn't say close second, but that's where people need to come, because the program for many horses that come out of New York, they almost always outrun their pedigree, because the purse money is so good. And you know, the New York breds over the years, there's many good stallions that came out of New York, and many good racehorses that end up being significant additions to people's broodmares bands, and, like I said, some significant stallions as well that come out of New York State and that was born here and bred here. You know, there's some really exciting breeders in New York that will always support us. Not to say that we won't go to Kentucky, but New York has its place in all of this, and Saratoga definitely helps to solidify that.
We talked near the middle late portion of the breeding season, and as I kind of alluded to, the new additions to the Rock Ridge roster, we won't see we'll see weanlings potentially in the fall, but we won't see yearlings until till another year,
next year.
Talk about the stallions and how the season wound down with we bred, for instance, the Leah Frick with Carla Bell, and excited for next spring and for her first foal. But talk about Disco Partner and a Shin Forward.
Yes.
Everybody.
So let's start with the Shin. I'll go alphabetically. A Shin Forward is a very interesting horse. Raised in Japan, off of no medication, no LASIK, no nothing, made $3 million plus. Then Addition Farm brought him back to New York and to stand him. And this is a horse that raced, and it's a quite interesting race record that he's had. Born in New York State, then sold and went to Japan, and had a very successful race career there. Started at stud there and then ended up coming back to New York. He should have some horses this year at the track. He doesn't have the biggest book, but that is a horse that, if you want clean with no medication, that's exciting to see a horse that can stand on his own there. Foals always has been very good. We've had primarily people race breed to him, but very exciting. And then on the other hand, we have Disco Partner with the late Frank and Pat Genrazio that continues to stand him and breeds a lot of mares to him. He is going to have a very nice weanling in the October sale that we are going to showcase. And there might be other ones, but we know for sure one that's going to go in that sale so people can see what he's thrown. We're happy to see what we've gotten. I've had probably a dozen or so foals that we've seen, and we kind of feel comfortable to be very optimistic to see what kind of race career these young foals will have since Disco was such a hard-knocking horse. I mean, it doesn't matter who you put against him. Kentucky, he always prevailed. Very, very legitimate horse. And that's a New York bred, New York sired. I mean, that's a true New York horse. So we are very excited to see where that will bring us. And then on our top end here this year, with breeding-wise, number-wise, was Leo Frick. Just under 70 mares, lots of foals we've gotten there. I think people are going to be very surprised to see what kind of physicals we've gotten out of him. Overall, I would say a huge proportion of those mares will be probably gray from what I've seen. Not that that's the biggest indicator, but it's good to see that the sire,
yes,
has a stamp on those foals, and that's what you want. You want them to be recognized when you watch them, and be exciting to see that there's a sire that stamps them, and maybe that will be some exciting things in the future for us to see where Leo Frick will stamp. And I think he's going to have a phenomenal year. I think babies will sell well. We've gone around and we've seen a number of babies that is absolutely exceptional. I think once it hits market, the buyers and the pinokers will enjoy seeing that. On the other hand, we have also Slumber. And Slumber has been an interesting horse for us. Came up from Kentucky. He was at Calumet and then a group with Saul Kuhlman at the head there, brought him up here, bred some mares. He's got a stake horse in this first crop, Fluffy Socks.
Right.
And, you know, so he's kind of had an interesting start, but we'll see once we get some New York bred. You know, he raced till he was 8. He was a hard-knocking horse, $1.4 million. And, you know, a lot of people that come into the farm and look at these horses, and then we pull them out, and they're very surprised. They're like, oh, I didn't expect him to be that good-looking. So that's the stallion market. You know, it's a very tough market. It's you think that the sales market is hard. The stallion market is just as hard because it's you always want to see what the stallion has done for the breeders and its offspring. So it's a constant evolvement, like an ebb and flow with stallions. So you got to have some strong guts to do that. So, but we're excited. We had a great year. I think there's all those mares that was bred in New York State, not just with us. I think most of all, I think overall New York had a solid breeding season.
To run through this for everybody as well, Slumber, who of course off the out of the Judmont operation, Leah Frick by Candy Ride, and is there another Candy Ride son standing in the Northeast?
No, not that I'm aware of. No.
So his dam was by Unbridled Song. So you've got a classic pedigree with Leah Frick. Disco Rico. I think I've told you this story, Larray. I wanted to have a Disco Rico when we tried to breed a few years ago. I wanted to have a Disco Rico who I just thought the world of, and. Joe DiRico, there was a season where Joe made an offer. That he was looking for 10 mares that matched up, and we offered one that we had rescued, actually, and he gave us a season and gave us a cover, and she delivered an absolutely gorgeous colt. Who subsequently picked up Rhodococcus, and eventually they could not get it out of him. It went from his lungs into it ultimately ended up in his pelvis, and it just you can't give him strong enough antibiotics.
No, that's a horrible disease that we all are so familiar with, and we don't. It's just. It's not a good disease. It's a very hard disease to fight.
The next year, or that year, we wanted to go back to Disco Rico, considering how beautiful the colt was. And literally, we were supposed to go on like a Monday, and it was on the Friday before he got taken out of service because that hoof was bothering him to such an extent. And he never, and of course, ultimately was euthanized at like 17 or 18. But anybody that has followed the Generazio story, what Frank and Patricia have done through Disco Rico was miraculous. And if Disco Partner is three quarters, half of what Disco Rico brought, he's going to be just a huge hit.
Right, what they did for New York and how they continue to support, I think it's a model for a lot of people to see what can be done. You know, Disco Rico is not a commercial horse, but, you know, out of that came Disco Partner. And, I mean, look at what those stallions, what racehorses comes out of New York. If you put them with the right people and you take care of your horses and you foster the relationship between, getting those horses to the racetrack. I mean, it's amazing what New York has done over the years. There should be such a big credibility factor for the race factor that New York State brings to our industry. It's phenomenal.
You know, and the dam, and I suppose it's part of what made Disco Partner so... so tough and successful, but that dam Lulu's number by numerous, and numerous gave what kind of like a scope, like kind of a bony and a sturdiness. You put those two together, and I imagine, you know, the Disco Partner is going to stamp horses that'll be tough, and that itself is something in today's marketplace. I mean, there's been plenty of breeding to make pretty, you know, to make pretty commercial horses, you know, if you want action and you want a horse to have a career, it's okay if they're not the most beautiful thing, as long as they as long as they're sturdy
and they can run. I mean, and we at a store here, some guys come up from Kentucky. We looked at some horses here just for different clients, and we had a Disco Partner that was in the stall, but we knew we were going to take him to a sale, and we brought them out, and one of the reactions was we didn't show him this horse, but one of the grooms here took the mare and the foal out to the paddock after we were looking at these babies that we point to different sales, and the first reaction was, who's that? You know, and when you get somebody's attention with, like, we looked at all these babies, but I want to know who that baby is, you know, it was a Disco Partner, and it was just one of those. You know, we stand and chat, and then when they're like, bring the horse by, you're like, I got, you know, it raises some eyebrows to see, okay, well, there's a racehorse, so that makes you feel like, hey, we've got, there's going to be some action when these babies start rocking and rolling.
Did he get some grays?
Yes, very much. This one was kind of a dark, so it's not completely filled out, but it will be a nice gray later on. And I think that's where the Ofric, I think the majority of those babies are going to be gray as well. And also, you know, I think it's such a... That's why I love the stallion game, and because you never know. You know, you can breed so many horses. You know, it only takes one. There's only one Kentucky Derby winner, but it puts you on the map.
Explain also, Larry, because I don't think we talked about it in the spring. The cooperative program that you've got with Micromanage and Giant Surprise available at the they're going to be available again next winter.
Right now, I'm not sure. We're still busy on talking a couple things, so I'm not sure what will happen next winter with those two. But for right now, I mean, Giant has always been a horse that throws very good runners. He's a legitimate sire. Micromanage as well. You know, with COVID and the races, that put a little damper on him starting with all his crops. So he was a more of a distance horse also. So there will be some... later horses, I think, will do fine. Not really getting off to a gangbuster start. So we'll just have to see how things progress with that.
Very good. And you know, for those that, you know, that haven't ever visited and haven't, you know, gone to rockridgestud.com, to the website, you know, talk about the services and the program overall, because it's comprehensive.
Yes, we're very much a commercial farm. So at this very moment, we are actually expanding a little bit, and we've got some more land. We started up a nice new barn, so people come take a look, and we'll probably add another 30 stalls. This is going to be a nice big new facility that's just going to be added to what we have already. You know, over the years. A lot of people has been supporting us, and we're very, very grateful for that, because the horse business, like everybody knows, it's a tough business. But over the years, we've had good quality care, and you know, we've had the staff that we have is competent, and people have, and that's why we are able to expand in an environment that, you know, I think people, I feel very confident that New York will be, in 5 years, so much better than we are right now. Not that we're bad. I think we're progressively trying to make our program better, which we should. And we should be attracting, not that we have bad stallions, we should attract much better stallions. Because I think our program is the best in the country. And if we stick with what we have and we deliver a good quality of care and horse, then people will always feel like there's at least a chance for the horse. If you can't take care of the horse, then the horse has no shot to be a significant competitor. So we've had many, many good race horses come with us over the last years. I've not been in on my own for that long, but I've been over almost 30 years now in the horse business. So that alone will help strengthen our clients. We've had wonderful good horses that's with us, and that still, I think, is going to come out. I think, and we're always doing new stallions. We are working on a very exciting new horse that I wish I could say it right now, but trust me, it will have some excitement. That you know, it's always good to have to evolve and do good things. I mean, that's why we breed. You always want to breed the best horse you can.
Well, we've been just thrilled to connect and you know, with Voltarine there and Carlisle Bell in full to Leah Frick. We beautifully delivered the Motown baby of Voltarines. Now she's been covered by Mosler, and she'll deliver a Mosler New York bred. I don't know how many Mosler New York breds there's going to be. Probably a couple.
Yeah,
but
sure you stand out. That's what you want.
Well, and eligible. In that case, a New York bred that'll be eligible for Maryland Million. And you know, that part of it, I people have heard me, Leray, for years now, I don't even confine this to New York, but extolling the virtues of the state bred program and the benefits, the rewards that come and you know, when I'm sure, you know, people have gotten checks and they look three times at the check and they can't believe, you know, that it might even be a horse they forgot they bred.
That's the one part that I always think is ironic. I don't always think people realize,
yeah,
you know, what New York has to offer. I'm almost convinced that they don't, because New York is like an untapped gem. I mean, you can breed horses. And, you know, like you said, and let's say you end up racing it or you sell it, whatever. But in 3 years, when you have a horse that some people follow that, but you get a horse that runs all in New York, you still get paid from that. And it's not just little checks. I mean, the incentive program to have a New York bred is phenomenal. And that's the part that I sometimes think they don't know. That Kentucky's got the upper hand with significant good stallions, but we've got the upper hand with the best program there is.
Well, and for people that you know, they hear this storyline, let me give you what the specific number is, for instance. I don't want to deride, obviously, the out of state stallions, but
yeah,
a New York sired baby. Not just baby, but a mature horse when they start racing.
A racehorse by a New York sired.
Exactly. 30% of purse money earned for a New York sired runner. 30% up to $40,000 per award. So that's in addition to the purse that you made, folks. You're getting 55% of the purse. And then here's a 30% bonus. So on a $60,000 purse, it's $18,000.
That you don't even have to worry about. Yes.
Yeah, just shows
up. It just gets mailed to you.
It's unbelievable. You get 30% as a win, 15% for second and third. Now, that's the breeder's award. On the owner's side, the owner's award, so that's an encouragement for, you know, even modestly commercial breeders. I mean, for some of you that are retiring mares at the end of the year, and you know, you've got the wherewithal to keep them, and you don't want to give them away or even sell them, you could be in business, and Leray would explain, you know, the financials of keeping a mare and keeping a baby. But for owners, for those of you running in races with a minimum claiming price of $30,000, New York sired another 20% per award up to $20,000. So this is for the owners. So if you breed your own to a New York sire and race yourself, you get both. You're getting the breeder award and the owner award. It's unbelievable. That's for an open. That's an open company. And in fact, I'll tell you at the end of Carlisle Bell's career, I she basically we retired her and. Maybe 90 or 100 days later, a check came, and it was from her last open company performances for the quarter, and it was, you know, it was the quarter following essentially, and I'd completely forgotten, and here's a check for whatever it was, 2,600 or I whatever the thing was, and I forget, I can't remember who the guest was, Larray, that called it mailbox money.
Exactly, and like, we have to have one more. Remember now, like in the racing part of it, like the Generazios, like Rapoli with us, they own the stallions as well. There's another yes. stallion awards if you invest in those horses as well. So that's another added, you know, part that these guys don't always know. It's amazing.
10% of purse money.
10%.
First, second,
awards,
and third, right? For up to 10,000 per award.
Per race, yeah.
Well, that's all. You know, it's funny. I'm basically doing this for the New York Thoroughbred Breeders, and all this information. Speaking of which, NYT, New York Thoroughbred Breeders.org for that, and RockRidgeStud.com, and talk to Larray at the sale or anytime by phone. Visit the website. We're delighted, and Larray, I'll see you later this afternoon. Good luck, obviously, with yes. the Frank conversation, and when that big news hits, you got to come back. And
I will, and trust me, I will be on. You'll be one of my first phone calls, and then we will do some exciting things in New York.
Outstanding.
Getting started.
I love it. Larray, thank you so much. Thanks for everything.
All right. Thank you.
Larray Visaggi, and Larray, who worked with the farm, was the old vinery, and Larray bought it and has gone on with it and does a fabulous job and has got the nicest staff. We've been down to the farm, since the baby was born a couple of different times, and they've been down in Maryland, and we've been waiting for a van to get them back home, actually. So next time we visit the farm, the baby should be back up from country life, and I'm excited. I'm realizing, actually, it's August, which means we're not that far off, and there'll be two more babies to go with the Motown right now, who is like a lunatic, but they did a beautiful job because he was a big foal, her first Voltairine's first baby, and we're excited about Carlisle Bell, and she's got this Leofric, and Larray kind of, I put it in his hands a little bit, and I said, what do you think? And I was very interested in Frank conversation, I think, is going to hit. And I love horses like him that, in fact, we discussed this with Doug O'Neill a while back, that was both, good on turf and dirt. And occurs to me, I didn't go see him in his I think he was out in the field when I visited. I didn't get to see him last time I was at the farm, right near Hudson, and rockridgestud.com. You put yourself in very good hands. Take care of your mare, and take care of everything for you. Just a couple of minutes, and let me catch in a few things that we didn't do. We'll worry about the pick six sequence tomorrow. There's also, we got to do some Canterbury in Indiana, some nice stakes. And speaking of stakes, three stakes today. Did I mention these? Where are those PPs? There's three stakes today. And, way too much paper on the desk. The Woodbine we're saving for when Mark Cassie feels better. We didn't get the Thistle down yet. There we go. We didn't get the Thistle down. They had that nice Best of Ohio card. I also want to talk. We got to talk. It was a quiet weekend at Del Mar, except for the steward stand. We got to talk about that in a second. At Delaware later, you've got the Cape Henlopen goes as the seventh today. The mile and a half on the turf, and this has got a nice field. And actually, I should check and see if there's been, sometimes when you see a field this size, you end up, there ends up being a few scratches, so I'm curious. But this is actually a nice group. Yeah, there we go, Delaware Park. And they're off the turf at Colonial today, which is a bit of a surprise. They rarely come off the grass. Just two scratches out of the Cape Henlopen. Scratch the seven, Luck Money, Delacour, and the 12, Sister O'Toole, Grand Motion. So a field of 10. We'll go postward. And now, those were two, that was second and third choice, Luck Money and Sister O'Toole. Wissahickon for Jonathan Thomas. And it's so funny, I saw Jonathan the other day. This is that Augustin Tappet gelding that's coming out of the Fort Marcy. Fifth, beaten a handful. And now, actually, I think you got to go. I think you're going to have to go shopping here for. Is there? Chucky Lawrence has got Real Factor, and you've got one Arigata off the claim. Those look like the speeds. And I suppose for love of country, Jamie Ness inside. There's a little bit of pace in here. I'm going to have to look at this again now with after those scratches. At Finger Lakes later, too, you've got the Jack Better Be Right, the mile and a 16th. Field of six there. And a couple of, looks like you got Charlie Baker's got Destination Winner's Circle. Yeah, 6-5 favorite. And then later at 7:30 tonight, 7:25, big field at Presque Isle in the Lady Erie. These are 3-year-olds going three quarters. It's a nice group for 75,000. I see Michael Salvaggio's got that nice filly that won the Malvern Rose. 3-1. Just one time. Looks like the horse to beat. Delacour is involved there with a Leal. Be Sneaky. Homebred. Oh, out of Bella Castini. Nice. Nice. Coming off an allowance win at Delaware. Trombetta, who's dangerous everywhere, Can't Buy Love, actually hit with a nice Friday. The day kind of was sideways early, and I caught a nice Trombetta on Friday. That was great. Mara, what was that? Right? Yeah, that was all right. That kind of saved the day. And I'll save the Ohio stuff. We'll save the Woodbine, as I mentioned. Oh, the Del Mar, the opener on Friday night. I almost brought this up with Mig when Mig talked about the DQ with four-star Dave. These are the most infuriating DQs. where the winner is brushing by everybody, and you know the horse's inclination is to dive to the rail when they see open, you know, if they're rallying wide, when they see open space, their inclination is to go toward the rail. Busker Alley under Jessica Pfeiffer was blowing through that field. These were cowbred maidens. And that's another part of this. These are two-year-olds. And I'm sorry, that filly is moving past everybody, and the horse that she kind of crowds herself was being pushed out a little bit and even had been come into contact with one of the horses from inside of her. And that contributed to her then being essentially crowded by the oncoming winner. And you take this horse down? You see people that are just beside themselves, and I don't blame anybody. And you know that I do my best to roll with DQs or non-calls. But these are the ones that make people absolutely nuts. I mean, the ones that are 50-50 and you watch it and you say, I might get taken down here. Okay, this one, and they put the inquiry up. This was not an objection even. I mean, you should appreciate that the stewards were proactive, that they sensed that there was something of an incident, that there, you know, those four horses had come together the way they did. But this was, I'm sorry. I don't get it. You want to fine Pfeiffer for, you know, coming in a little bit? Do that. But stop taking the best horse down. You know, they say, oh, because it may have cost, was that Mongolian Rim, I think? Might have cost Mongolian Rim a chance at a placing. First of all, I don't think that's the case. I think Mongolian Rim was going to finish fourth no matter what. So this is just, I understand everybody's disgust with this. And these are the ones where a horse is rushing by. We talk about that, was it Smart and Pretty from years ago in the Black Eyed Susan when Dale got taken down. That was, that's the model. And there was one, there was a famous one with, another California incident. I remember we had him on. He's retired now. I'll think of it after we get off the air. Anyway, yeah. So if you were complaining, I don't blame you. I also wouldn't mind. I've got to reach out today, maybe, or maybe I don't know if he's coming to Vegas. If he had a prior Vegas win, but congratulations to Randall Miller, who won a very exciting edition of the big contest over the weekend, the Spa and Surf, the showdown, won $240,000. I was watching. We were coming home from Connecticut, and I was keeping track. It was fun. He made a move. I think in the seventh race at Del Mar, got him from like fifth and up to first. So they had a big pot. They had like a $600,000 pot. Horse turnies. Thanks to Larray. Good luck to everybody today. Second day and this last day of the sale. And Lee Einsiedler earlier as well with Jeffrey heading back and talking High Oak. Terrific visit with you, Robertson, winning the million, the Mr. D, and Mig. Good luck today, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at pabred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.